Hello out there in podcast land. Hope you're having a good day wherever you may be. This is Then and Now, the podcast with its ninth episode. I'm your host, John Shomo, and we're ready to cover a lot of ground this week. We're going to deal with the facts from the last week of April, as well as some current events. And boy, there are a lot of current events, both in the sports world and in the news. And we'll follow up and finish with, as usual, our three good questions segment. So first off, let's get started. Let's go through the next week of facts, starting with the date April 24th. On April 24th, 1898, Spain declared war on the United States. Probably they shouldn't have done that, I'm thinking, historically. Birthdays on April 24th include the great Barbara Streisand, who will be 82. On that day, Barbara Streisand, legendary singer, actress, etc. Omar Vizquel, former Cleveland Indians shortstop, as well as with the Seattle Mariners. Omar Vizquel will be 57. And Pittsburgh Penguins defenseman Chris Letang turns 41 on April 24th. A note about Chris Letang. He and two of his teammates achieved something that had never been done before in North American professional sports this season. Chris Letang, Sidney Crosby, and Evgeny Malkin of the Pittsburgh Penguins have played together on the same team in the NHL for 18 consecutive seasons. That's a record for three players. Now, the Penguins, sadly for me, did not make the playoffs this year. But if you want to really watch some great hustling and guys going 100% all the time, watch yourself a couple of NHL Stanley Cup playoff games. It is remarkably fun to watch. Okay, moving on, April 25th, lots of birthdays, including Edward R. Murrow, kind of the patron saint of television newsmen. Ed Murrow, born on April 25th, 1908, he was the guy, he was the man who really started CBS News' tremendous heritage of truth-telling. Ed Murrow, a legend, died in the mid-1960s. Ella Fitzgerald, jazz great. Born on April 25th, 1918. Here's an irony. Two stars of the film Godfather celebrate birthdays on April 25th. Al Pacino will be 84, and Talia Shire, who played his sister in the film, will be 78 on April 25th. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver will turn 62 during the playoffs. ESPN's Monday Night Football play-by-play man, he's been on Fox Sports for a long time before moving to ESPN a few years ago. Joe Buck will be 55 on April 25th. And Basketball Hall of Famer from Wake Forest and the San Antonio Spurs, the Hall of Famer Tim Duncan, will be 48 years old on April 25th. Okay, April 26th. English settlers landed at Cape Henry, Virginia on that date in 1607. Those were the settlers that eventually founded the colony at Jamestown, the first English-speaking colony in North America. John Wilkes Booth, the assassin of Abraham Lincoln, was killed by an army soldier with an itchy trigger finger near Bowling Green, Virginia, in a farmhouse on April 26, 1865. And the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, Chernobyl now in Ukraine, wasn't part of the Soviet Union at that time. Chernobyl had the nuclear meltdown starting on April 26, 1986. Former First Lady Melania Trump will be 54 on April 26th. And Yankees slugger struggling so far this season, Aaron Judge, will be 31. On April 27th, in 1982, John Hinckley Jr., accused of attempting to assassinate President Ronald Reagan, was found not guilty by reason of insanity in a courtroom. He shot President Reagan and three others in March of 1981. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity. That meant that he spent time in a mental institution, less and less time as the years went on. He got released for one weekend a month at first, and then weekends at his parents' house in Williamsburg. And he is a free man today. Actually, he performs, believe it or not, he performs musical concerts once in a while. I don't know really if I'd pay any money to see John Hinckley Jr. play the guitar. Birthdays on April 27th, the 18th president and the first five-star general, Ulysses S. Grant, born in Ohio on April 27th, 1822. Coretta Scott King, wife and widow of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Coretta Scott King, born on April 27, 1927. And Corey Seager, last year's World Series MVP with the Texas Rangers, will be 30. On April 28th, Maryland became the seventh state to join the Union on that date in 1788. The Boston Celtics won their eighth straight NBA title on April 28, 1966 at the Garden, a 95-93 Game 7 thriller over the Los Angeles Lakers. And Jim Valvano, the wonderful coach of the North Carolina State Wolfpack basketball coach, passed away of his cancer on April 28, 1993. Birthdays on April 28th include the fifth president, James Monroe, born in Virginia in 1758, Jay Leno, the longtime host of The Tonight Show, will be 74. Two-time major champion in golf, Big John Daly, will be 58 on April 28th. And local product, Nordonia High School, the Ohio State Buckeyes, and now with the Cleveland Browns, Denzel Ward, will be 27. Hopefully he can stay healthy for a full season this year. April 29th, Hall of Fame shortstop Louis Aparicio, White Sox, Orioles, Red Sox, is 90 on April 29th. Another two-time major golf champion, Johnny Miller, who spent a long time as the lead golf analyst for NBC Sports, Johnny Miller will be 77 on April 29th. Jerry Seinfeld will be 70. He needs no introduction. Uma Thurman, the actress, will be 54. And another two-time major golf champion, Justin Thomas, has won two PGA championships. He'll be 31 on April 29th. April 30th brings us to the date on which George Washington was inaugurated as our first president in New York City on April 30th, 1789. Louisiana became a state, the 18th state, on that date in 1812. Adolf Hitler ended his own life in the bunker in Berlin on April 30th, 1945. That's not a bad thing. And Saigon fell to the communists, the capital of South Vietnam, the end, basically, of the Vietnam War on April 30th, 1975. A couple of interesting birthdays on April 30th to wrap this segment up. Willie Nelson will be 91, and he is still out there touring, believe it or not, at the age of 91. And actress Gal Gadot, played Wonder Woman, is 39 on April 30th. Okay. That's it for that segment. Let's get to some topics that are going on currently. We'll take the serious one first, and then we'll get to the fun stuff, with it, which is the sports department. The Trump trial has begun in New York City. The trial about election interference and former President Trump allegedly paying hush money to keep Stormy Daniels and another woman quiet. The TV coverage is just too much to, you know, it's farcical, really. TV cameras are not allowed in the courtroom in Manhattan. This is a Manhattan District Court deal, and they have reporters in the courtroom, but they're texting or whatever. But the news channels on television are just wall to wall, showing Trump's picture there scowling at you from the table, drawings of the judge and everything, and you get bit by bit coverage, and they're staying on long after the trial adjourns. The trial has adjourned the first couple of days at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they're on until 5 or 6 o'clock with just wall-to-wall coverage of the trial. There's not that much going on, really, at this point. Yes, it's unprecedented in American history. Yes, it's important to cover it, no question about it. But it's kind of useless on live television, if you will. I would think they'd be well served to do a 5 or 10 minute segment every hour. But I'm not running any of the TV news channels, so they don't ask me. I think it is rather odd, funny, whatever the case may be, given what this trial is about, that the first witness was a man by the name of David Pecker. I just think that's pretty interesting. Okay. The immunity question, that will be decided this week by the U.S. Supreme Court, or at least they're going to hear arguments on whether or not presidents have immunity from all acts. Well, they don't. I can answer the question for you. That was decided in U.S. versus Nixon in 1974. I don't really know why they're even hearing these arguments, but they're going to hear those this week. Okay, let's get to the fun part of the world, the sports department. First of all, this week is the NFL draft. It's being held in Detroit. up in the state up north starting Thursday. I love C.J. Stroud's quote, the best receiver in the country, I think, on the football field in college football last year, the best player, period, was Marvin Harrison Jr. Yes, I'm biased. I have scarlet and gray in me. But Marvin Harrison Jr. was the best player in college football, in my opinion. And the first three teams at the draft look like they want to take a quarterback. That would be Chicago, Washington, and New England. They certainly could demonstrate a need to take a quarterback. The fourth team to pick is Arizona. And as C.J. Stroud said, don't be dumb. Don't think too hard. It's Marv. And it is Marv. Now, will there be a trade to shake things up in the first three? That happens sometimes. I don't know. I have my top six here. Caleb Williams going to the Bears. Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner, going to Washington. Drake May from North Carolina going to New England. Then Arizona does the right thing and picks Marv. Minnesota needs a quarterback. They're going to make a mistake and pick J.J. McCarthy. And the Giants at number six probably will pick Malik Nabers, the next best receiver, the LSU receiver. He's really good. There's my six. We'll see. I'll probably be proved wrong here pretty soon. Speaking of receivers, a shout out to Talmadge High School graduate Colin Dixon, now with the Fighting Illini of the University of Illinois. Colin made a long TD catch in the spring game last Saturday. Way to go, Colin. I know myself as a teacher and other people that I know who coached and taught Colin, we all love the guy. He's just a tremendous young man. He's the kind of guy you really like to root for. So way to go, Colin. Nice job. Look good on TV, too. While we're doing shout-outs here, a shout-out to my friend, the new Talmadge Athletic Hall of Famer, John Carnath. A couple of weeks ago, he scored his first hole-in-one in his life over at Fox Den Golf Course in Stowe, Ohio, on number five, about 135-yard par three with a very difficult green. So good job. Welcome to the club, Coach. You tied me at one. All right, the NBA playoffs are ongoing. One thing bugs me, these teams wear different uniforms every single game. I know I'm kind of getting up there long in the tooth, you know, and tend to be more traditional, but I love to see the white Celtics uniform, the old traditional uniform on the parquet floor in Boston. I love to see the 76ers in a blue or red road uniform and a white one at home. The Lakers should wear the gold one at home and the purple one on the road. Sometimes it's crazy. You turn on. I really think that maybe some people with some color blindnesses are having a hard time distinguishing between the two teams as they watch these games on television. Maybe they ought to think about that in the NBA somewhat. I don't know, but the playoffs have been interesting so far. Cleveland's up 2-0 as we record this. There was a wild game, couple of wild games recently there. Knicks in Philadelphia and the LA-Denver game were crazy. The NBA playoffs are fun, but really, if I have the choice, I like to watch the hockey playoffs just a little bit better, the pro hockey playoffs. So I'll be flipping around as we go here. Okay, I think that's it for the topics for this week. Let's get to questions. First of all, before we get to our three good questions this week, we have the results. I'm sure you're all waiting with bated breath for the results of the sandwich contest. Which is the best way to cut a sandwich? We have a few answers here. Myself, I chose diagonally. I think I like that best. Jeff Cole had several answers. He said, if it's peanut butter and jelly, you go with the four triangles, the club kind of look. If it's ham and turkey, you go horizontally. If it's grilled cheese, you kind of diagonally. So those are Jeff's picks. My friend Bob Beals, four triangles, the club way. That's his best way. Okay. Brother-in-law Mike says diagonal if you like the crust, four triangles if not. You know, I never knew we'd get so many different results from just how to cut a sandwich. So that's what we got. Thank you for the feedback, guys. Appreciate it. Okay, here's our three good questions for this week. First one comes from the aforementioned Jeff Cole. What was the name of the rider who made it through to Concord in 1775? If you recall on the previous episode, We celebrated the anniversary of Paul Revere's Midnight Ride, April 18, 1775. Paul Revere gets the credit because he was a famous silversmith. He was famous around town and around Boston before he made the ride. He and William Dawes and Dr. Samuel Prescott all rode out toward Concord. Prescott actually was the last one to join. They all got stopped by a British sentry. Dawes and Revere were relieved of their horses and had to walk back. Prescott got away, and he's the one who rode all the way to Concord to warn the folks there that the British were coming for the arsenal of weapons and ammunition that the Minutemen had stored there. So Dr. Samuel Prescott is the answer to that question. He's the guy who probably should have got more credit than anybody else. But again, it became Paul Revere's Midnight Ride, thanks to Longfellow's poem. And that's how we were all taught it, and that's how we know it today. But a tip of the hat to Dr. Prescott. Thanks, Jeff. That's a great question. The second question this week is from Anonymous. This person did not want to be identified. And this person asks, what are the monitors on the defense table in the Trump trial for? If you notice the drawings made by the courtroom artists or the photographs that are taken before the session starts, they are allowing photographers, that's the name, still photographers in before the start of the sessions to snap pictures of the defendant sitting there glowering at the camera. There's always a monitor or two in front of them. Looked it up. It's what I thought, but I wanted to look it up anyway. That's for replaying or displaying evidence, you know, pieces of paper, photos, etc. Any video recordings that are part of the depositions or the testimony or anything like that. So instead of shuffling papers all around all the time, they can put up on the screen evidence. The screens are also behind the judge to the side in the courtroom. The jury has access to see these things as well. That's a great question. Thank you, Anonymous, for that one. Our third question, and I'm going to go to my phone to get this one here. Let me pull it up because I just got it a couple of hours ago. It's an email from friend John Ellis down in North Carolina, or Virginia. He lives in Virginia now, I think, right? Here's John's question. I'll just read what he wrote and then we'll answer it. The Major League Baseball, like other professional sports leagues, is now in bed with sports betting enterprises. No kidding. That's for sure. Will we ever see Pete Rose elected to the Hall of Fame, even posthumously? I find the league has less high ground these days. Well, that's a really good point and a really good question, John. One thing to remember in the whole Pete Rose deal. Major League Baseball, the organization, doesn't run the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. They have a Hall of Fame board and a president and so forth. They kind of run their own show, and they make the decisions as to who's eligible to be on the ballot. They could change those rules at any time. But as of this moment, still, for the last, 30-some years, Pete Rose has been deemed not to be eligible to be voted for the Baseball Hall of Fame. My thought, gosh, it's a complicated thing. I saw Pete Rose play as a kid and as a young adult. He was never on the right team. He played for the Reds when they tormented the Pirates, and then he played for the Phillies. But he was, I think, a great example for dads to show their kids how you play hard. He would run to first base, jog to first base at least after he got walked. He always ran all out. He always gave his all. He wasn't the most gifted, talented guy. He didn't have that sweet swing like Ken Griffey Jr. or, you know, the smooth moves in the outfield like Mays or Clemente or those guys. But he got the job done, and he was part of a lot of winning teams and got more hits than any person that ever played the game. But he gambled on baseball while player manager, as it was, of the Cincinnati Reds in the mid-1980s. If you know anything about baseball history, you know the one taboo dating back 100 years now plus is gambling on the sport of baseball. Now, we've seen it in the NBA here recently with Porter Jr. being eliminated from the NBA for life because he bet on NBA games, including games involving his team. Pete Rose bet on baseball. The reason that's such a no-no, aside from the history of the Black Sox scandal, is that a manager has inside information. Managers talk to other teams' managers. They talk to other players. They know who's hurt. They know who's not. They know who's struggling. They know who might be going through some personal problems, let's say. And it's just, you know, it's just the biggest no-no that you can pull. And he did it, and he knew better. The sign is on every clubhouse door to this day. That's the rule that's posted on the clubhouse door in every major league ballpark. No gambling on baseball. But he did it. Bart Giamatti, the commissioner, suspended him for life and died a week later of a heart attack, tragically. Yes, that's the same Giamatti. It's Paul Giamatti's father, by the way, the actor. But Pete Rose has been banned ever since. He's been allowed to be at a couple of things, on the field celebrations, reunions in Cincinnati. But other than that, he cannot be associated with Major League Baseball. And that's lasted since 1989. 35 years ago now. So I don't know. I don't know all the answers. I know that he'd be a great example of to young kids of playing as hard as you can all the time. He did that. But he's also an example of a guy who just knew the rules and broke them anyway. If they would elect him, I would hope they would put something on the plaque about his misdeed. Also to teach lessons to people as they go through the Hall of Fame. But as of this moment, John, it's a moot point. He is not deemed eligible to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm sure we'll all hear about it a lot if that ever changes. But Pete Rose is in his 80s now. It's kind of a sad situation. But he, you know, as my parents once said, he made his own bed. He's going to have to lie in it. And he has for a long time. But thank you. That's a great question and a really fascinating topic. Thanks to John for that one. Got a couple more questions in the queue here. We'll save them for next week. I think we're just about done for the last show of April. How about that? Episode number 9 is in the books. Thanks to all of you who have given us feedback. It's great to hear that folks are actually listening and enjoying the podcast. I enjoy making it. Hopefully you enjoy it as much as I do. We'll talk to you next week. This is Then and Now. John Chomo signing off. Have a great week, everybody.